Welcome to Folk Files, a podcast where we uncover the mysteries of folk music through the ages and dive deep into the tangled history of murder ballads, sea shanties, rebel songs, and other music that has withstood the test of time. I'm your host, Olivia Harding. This is the very first episode of Folk Files, so I think it's important to answer a few crucial questions first. For example, who am I? And what is folk music? We'll start with the second one. Folk music is really hard to define. The BBC has identified 7 characteristics that folk music usually has. I'll go through that list, but in my opinion, the characteristics add up to a definition that is easily picked apart and not very satisfying. Number 1. Folk music is transmitted orally rather than through a written score. Note that this is orally as in by mouth. These days, people are more likely to learn things the other orally, by ear. The difference between the two for me is that learning things through the oral tradition implies a game of telephone. Each person sings a song slightly differently, tweaking the lyrics and tune until there are many variations. This game of telephone is often referred to as the folk process. If everyone learns something by ear by listening to the same version on Spotify or in a YouTube video, there end up being fewer variations, and the folk process isn't put to work. The second characteristic that the BBC lists is that the original composer of a folk song is often unknown. I don't think that's true anymore, since we have better systems of documentation and attribution. Lots of folk songs have known authors. This Land Is Your Land was written by Woody Guthrie, The Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald is by Gordon Lightfoot, and The Circle Game was written by Joni Mitchell. But these are all still folk. Number 3. Folk music is played on traditional instruments. Now, we could argue what a traditional instrument is. For example, if I play an electric accordion, which sounds just like an acoustic accordion, is it still traditional? But even beyond that, there are plenty of folk songs that don't use traditional instruments. For example, the 1970s English folk revival was famous for using electric guitars and synth to reimagine folk songs. Number 4. Folk songs may have themes of cultural or national identity. Now, that may be true for some songs. So there are many Irish songs, for example, that are very clearly Irish. But there are twice as many folk songs that feel universal and deal with very general themes of love, betrayal, adventure, and unity and solidarity. Number 5 on the list. Folk music is often functional, associated with a specific activity or place. Now, there are many genres of work songs, such as sea shanties, mining songs, and cloth working songs, but it's definitely not a general rule. Number 6 is that folk music is historically rural. The word historically is important here, because this isn't true today. As someone who travels a bunch, I know it's much more likely that I'll find a trad session or a folk society in a city. Perhaps you can still find strong traditions in Appalachia and rural Ireland, but otherwise, as with most genres, the cities are now the center of music. Number 7. Folk music is participatory rather than presentational. While I definitely agree with this in principle and think that folk music is for the folk and should be a group activity, not everyone agrees with me. I have been to plenty of folk concerts where group participation was frowned upon. I personally don't find any of these 7 characteristics particularly useful for defining folk music, and I want to tell you my personal favorite definition of folk music, but in order to do so, I think it's important to tell you about my own experience with folk music. I have considered myself a folk singer for about 15 years, which in the grand scheme of things is not very long at all. While I grew up with a lot of folk in the flavor of Joan Baez and Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young and Bob Dylan, thanks to my parents, I didn't encounter a lot of traditional folk until college, when I joined a pirate crew called Arr, which is spelled with 3 R's and 3 exclamation marks, all capitalized. Some people mistakenly referred to Arr as a pirate-themed a cappella group, but we were really a singing-themed pirate crew. We went on adventures, caused mischief, and casually learned and performed an enormous repertoire of sea shanties, maritime music, and Irish folk. It was the perfect example of folk at its most raw. Some of our members were tone deaf. Some barely knew the lyrics, but singing was a passionate communal activity nevertheless. Through Arr, I had the chance to slip into other folk spheres, like the Mystic Sea Music Festival at Mystic Seaport in Connecticut, or the New England Folk Festival. I also spent 6 months at Cambridge University and attended meetings of the Folk Society there. Of course, that was all for fun. As part of my actual academic degree, I majored in early modern studies with a focus on music performance. I was especially interested in secular music, the sort of music that is performed in the street, which is arguably folk music. After graduating, I ran away and joined the Renaissance Fair, and eventually co-founded the group Music the Gathering. I have performed at myriad Renaissance fairs throughout the country in Florida, Colorado, Oklahoma, Pennsylvania, New York, Maryland, Virginia, Maine, Connecticut, and Massachusetts. Because of the amount of time I've spent at the Ren Fair, and because I suspect that some of my earliest listeners will also be from that world, I have decided to devote a decent amount of airtime to Ren Fair arrangements of folk music. It's a niche of folk music that hasn't been given a lot of scholarly attention, from what I've discovered, at least. One final piece of my musical resume, and the secondary source of my favorite definition of folk music, is a New York-based group called Exceedingly Good Song Night. Exceedingly Good Song Night is an extremely welcoming monthly gathering where participants are called upon one by one to lead a song linked to a theme. For example, our last theme was surf and turf. We've had light and dark, things like that. You don't actually need to stay on theme, and complicated justifications for why your song fits the theme are always welcome. I've learned countless folk songs thanks to the frequenters of Exceedingly Good Song Night. On their website and emails, they have a quote from Big Bill Brunsey, a famous blues, gospel, and folk singer and guitarist from the early 20th century. He is credited with answering, "Is that a folk song?" with, "Must be. I never heard no horses sing it." Coincidentally, this quote and its attribution was subject to the folk process. In the case of this quote, which Brunsey used multiple times and in multiple ways throughout his career, it was eventually misattributed to Louis Armstrong in the format, "All music is folk music. I ain't never heard a horse sing a song." But I admit that all music is folk music is not a satisfactory definition, and I'm not sure we'll get one. My thought is that folk music is kind of self-defining. If a song is sung and everyone thinks, "That's folk music," then it's folk music. Okay, now that we've got definitions and introductions out of the way, it's time to talk about our main song for this episode, Health to the Company. If you frequent Renaissance fairs, it's likely that you know this song. It is often used as the closer at festivals, a chance for everyone to lift up their voices and toast one another in parting. The narrator of the song encourages everyone to join in the song, talks about their true love, and then expresses hope for safe travels. The chorus encourages everyone to drink out of the same glass, which, while very questionable with our current knowledge of germ theory, was historically a common practice, especially at ceremonial gatherings. For example, the quaich was a Scottish cup that would be passed around at weddings to bind a family together. The version of Health to the Company that is sung at festivals now is a minor waltz and sounds something like this. Here's a health to the company, and one to my lass. Let us drink and be merry, all out of one glass. Let us drink and be merry, all grief to refrain. For we may or might never meet here again. Which was why I was so surprised when I started digging into the origins of the song and found that all of the early versions were in a major key. I knew something was off when I saw multiple sources saying that the song loaned its tune to the American anthem, The Liberty Song, which sounds something like this.
Come join hand in hand, brave Americans all, and rouse your bold hearts at fair liberty's call. No tyrannous act shall suppress your just claim, or stain with dishonor America's name. In freedom we're born, and in freedom we live. Our purses are ready. Steady, boys, steady. Not as slaves, but as free men, our money will give.
To be fair, I don't think that even the earliest recorded versions of Health to the Company sound like the Liberty Song, and most of the sources that mention the connection use the exact same language as the Wikipedia article. so I wonder if it's an error that has just been copied and pasted all over the internet. But when I play the earliest versions of the song, lovingly collected by one of my favorite English folk music forums, mainly Norfolk, they are all in a major key. Here's an example from 1979 from folk singer Vin Garbutt.
Here's a health to the company, and to my lass, let's drink and be merry, all out of one glass. Let's drink and be merry, all grief to refrain, for we may or might never all meet here again.
Where did the beloved minor version come from? It became my quest to try and find out. There's one thing that I can already tell will become a pattern on this podcast, and that is the question, is it Irish or is it Scottish? The two Gaelic nations have traditions that are strongly intertwined, to the point that it's rare to find a traditional song that is clearly from one country or the other. In the case of Health to the Company, all signs point to the fact that it was written about emigration from Scotland or Ireland, probably in the 1800s. For Renfair fans, this is common. The songs we love to sing in our fantasy 16th century world are often only from the 19th century. The earliest record we have of it being sung is from 1836, but it is likely older. The song is sung from the point of view of an emigrant who is about to leave, possibly for America. The emigration theme gives support to the idea that the song is Irish, specifically from Ulster, since most of the early emigrants were from Ulster. There are specifically Scottish versions of the song, for example, The Emigrant's Farewell to Dunside, which comes from Aberdeen and specifically mentions Virginia in the lyrics. There is also a broadside from 1890 with similar lyrics, sung by a girl saying goodbye to a soldier. A broadside refers to a song that was cheaply printed on a single sheet of paper and distributed in the streets. This broadside version starts, "There was a poor lassie, I pity her lot." One of my favorite lyric differences that I discovered was in the Choral Public Domain Library, where I read, "I'm a friend to the company, come join me in crime." All right, let's do it. I'm going to take a moment to point out that I'm standing on the shoulders of giants when it comes to tracing the many tendrils of folk music, specifically the giant known as Steve Rowd, an English librarian and folk music historian. He compiled an enormous database of English folk music and assigned each song a number, now known as a Rowd number, which could be shared by songs that had essentially the same plot or very similar lyrics or structure. I'm going to point out that until 5 minutes ago, I thought his name was pronounced Rude, so I'm so glad I looked that up and didn't do him the disservice of calling him Rude. Health to the Company's Rowd number, for example, is 1801. It was through the Rowd number that I discovered something very confusing. Health to the Company had a few different titles, such as Good or Kind Friends and Companions or Emigrant's Farewell, but one of the main ones is The Parting Glass. This makes sense because the final drink of the night was often known as The Parting Glass or The Stirrup Cup, since guests would often already have their feet in the stirrups while they were drinking it. These final quaffs are where we get the term one for the road. But if you are a folk music nerd like me, you know that there is another very well-known song called The Parting Glass.
Oh, the money that e'er I've had, I've spent it in good company, and all the harm that e'er I've done, alas, it was to none but me.
Etc. Well, that song came after Health to the Company and became the more popular song by that name. But it makes perfect sense that Health to the Company would have been the original Parting Glass. What's interesting is Parting Glass can be minor or major depending on what chords you put behind it, and it's frequently sung either way. Was Health to the Company the same, and now we only sing the minor chorded version? The first recording that I found of a minor Health to the Company was surprisingly late, It was from 1989 on the Chieftains album, A Chieftain's Celebration. It is sung a cappella, but clearly in a minor key. I reached out to the Chieftains to figure out where they learned the song, but sadly my breadcrumb trail ended there. Ah well. So I looked closer to home. After all, Ren Faires were in full swing in 1989 when the Chieftains recorded their version, so perhaps someone in those circles knew where the minor key came from. While I didn't learn where the minor key came from, I did learn something more specific, where the typical Ren Faires arrangement came from, which was another answer I had been looking for. If you have heard Health to the Company at a Ren Faires, it's likely that you've heard it one of two ways. A cappella with drums with simple droning harmonies, or with a poignant, almost melancholy chord structure. Jerry Barry, who has been performing on the Ren Faires circuit for over 30 years, spoke to me about the likely origins of that arrangement of the song, which he recorded with his band, the Minstrels of Mayhem, in 1995. He believes the well-known arrangement stems from the late, great Bob Bielefeld, who performed with multiple Renaissance Faire bands, including Cantiga. Jerry wrote to me, "I had been aware of Health to the Company as a major song with a fairly monotonous melody, but fell in love with Bob's arrangement." Here's a little bit of Minstrels of Mayhem's version.
Kind friends and companions, come join me in rhyme. Come lift up your voices in chorus with mine. Let us drink and be merry, all grief to refrain. For we may and might never all meet here again.
It isn't clear if Bob created the chord progression or borrowed it from elsewhere, but Jerry suspects it's a combination of the two, especially because the sequence is, as he says, a little too sophisticated for folk tradition. Jerry went on to say that a year or two after Minstrels of Mayhem recorded the song, Owen Fife, another beloved Ren Faires musician who is no longer with us, began doing his own version where he added the sixth chord at the end of each verse and chorus. For those listening who don't know what that means, it means going like this. Instead of this. Otherwise, Owen used Bob's chord sequence. Owen was widely traveled, and so it's likely that many people heard that chord sequence from him. Here's a taste of Owen's arrangement.
So here's a health to the company, and one to my lass. Let us drink and be merry, all out of one glass. Let us drink and be merry, all grief to refrain. For we may or might never all meet here again.
What's interesting about Owen's chord change is that it makes the song very similar to another old folk song, If I Was a Blackbird, sometimes known as I Am a Young Maiden. The narrator of that song is, surprise, a young maiden who is pining for her lover who is on board a ship. She dreams of turning into a blackbird and flying to her lover's ship to join him. As beautiful as the song is, I've always thought it was an odd bird to choose. Perhaps an ornithologist can correct me, but I looked into blackbird migratory patterns and they don't appear to travel over oceans. If I Was a Blackbird does not have the same route number as Health to the Company, since the story is so different, but I've always noticed that the tunes are very similar. Which was why I was surprised to discover that If I Was a Blackbird is also performed in a major key in all the earliest recordings. Despite sounding similar today, the two songs are assumed to have different histories. If I Was a Blackbird was almost definitely a broadside because it was composed of what are called floating verses. Floating verses are traded among many different songs, so you can hear almost identical lyrics from If I Was a Blackbird in songs like Pretty Sarrow, The Turtle Dove, Wagoner's Lad, and The Little Sparrow. Broadside ballads commonly had floating verses, I'm assuming because of the idea, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. If people liked a verse, why not use it in other songs with similar meters? There's also the possibility that before it was a broadside, it came from the Roma. Carolyn Hughes, a Romani queen from Dorset, was known to sing it. And people often talked about singing the song in the old way versus the way that singer Delia Murphy sang it on the radio in 1939. Whatever its origins, it appears to have been sung in a major key in all recordings until the late 20th century. I have a hypothesis about when the shift happened. I think it was Winnie Ryan's version, I Am a Poor Girl, recorded in 1973. She sings the song a cappella in a very traditional Irish way that might actually be making a comeback today. Lisa O'Neill, who has been featured on Peaky Blinders, uses elements of this style of singing. Take a listen.
Oh, it is sad. And in one style have a courting by a rakish young man.
The issue with this style is that it's not very precise. It's very rough, so if you want to learn the song from the singer, you may need to take some liberties. And you can also essentially add whatever chords underneath that you think might work. 8 years after the Winnie Ryan version, I found the first recording that sounds like the arrangement that I know by the delightfully named Silly Wizard.
I am a young sailor, my story is sad. Though once I was carefree and a brave sailor lad, I courted a lassie by night and by day. Ah, but now she has left me and sailed far away.
So, we have two songs with very similar tunes but very different origins that both have gone from commonly performed major to commonly performed minor. I'm excited to keep exploring to see if this is a trend in folk music. Are there many songs that have made the shift from major to minor? Does it reflect a general cultural shift where more people prefer minor melancholy songs now than they did at the turn of the century? I'm curious. It's very likely that I'll find out more about these songs as I research other folk songs. Perhaps I'll hear back from the chieftains and get a few more breadcrumbs to follow. If I do, I'll be sure to share them in further episodes. I recognize that my ability to research is limited. I am searching internet forums, music catalogs, and YouTube, when most of the information I crave is likely locked away in memories and oral tradition. My age is a factor, of course. I'm too young to have met some of the brilliant minds who shaped these songs into the versions we know now, and I don't have decades of experience in the folk sphere. But I do have a hunger to learn more. So I encourage you, if you are listening to this podcast and have any more breadcrumbs for me to follow or want to make a correction, feel free to reach out to me on Instagram or Facebook at Folk Files Podcast. That's F-O-L-K-F-I-L-E-S for anyone who may think that it's Greek for lovers of folk, which, yes, was part of the pun. Shh. Thank you so much for taking the time to peel back the layers with me. My name is Olivia Harding, and this has been Folk Files. For a complete list of all of the recordings used in this podcast, check out the episode notes. Special thanks to Misty Bernard, Jerry Barry, and Aaron J. Morton.